Sean, what is the root of the word chirp?
Well, how's your Middle English? do you have sort of like a decent command of 600-year-old English terms?
I'm gonna head off and get the dictionary while you continue here for a second.
Exactly. That's where it comes from. It's the origins are not entirely clear, as is often the case with language. But there was a word called chirping, which or tripinge, P-Y-N-G-E, and there was also an even more archaic term called the chirkin, which is a synonym for Twitter, which, you know, everybody knows what that is, right? A online method to insult one another. Essentially, it's onomatopoeic, and it has to do with bird noises, quite frankly. And so, essentially, this has now been, of course, adapted to a hockey context. And I wish I knew who it was that first said chirp rather than trash talk or insult or whatever it was that they would have been saying back then. I'm guessing this is probably as old as the game itself and dates back to the 1800s, if not earlier. But yeah, of course, in the hockey context, it's to do with light insults, sometimes not so light insults, and a little bit of verbal jousting that often is very friendly.
There is trash talk in football and basketball. Is chirping in hockey any different?
I think it is. I mean, qualitatively, I think there is a lot of this type of invective that happens in the heat of competition. Sometimes it's due to anger. Sometimes it's just due to gamesmanship, trying to get people off their game. But hockey's version of it is a little different. And I think that, yes, it exists in order to destabilize opponents and all these other sorts of things. But I do also think that there is a tradition of humor, and there is a tradition also of, quite frankly, liberal and democratic use of chirping. You can chirp your teammates, you can chirp your coach, you can chirp your buddies, you can chirp your parents, you can chirp just about anybody, and anybody can chirp you. And in hockey, that's just kind of how it goes, generally from a fairly young age, based on what I've been able to establish in my research and talking to various people within the hockey world. So I do think it is different. And I think it's different partly because of, again, the element of being funny, and just because of the different facets that it takes on. It's not strictly an aggressive endeavor. And so I also think that what's different about chirping is that it also exists essentially at all levels of hockey. Perhaps I'm repeating myself a little bit, but for example, my 10-year-old little boy loves to chirp his buddies, and they love to chirp him. And that's just kind of how it goes. And I had nothing to do with that, believe it or not. It's just the sort of stuff that develops organically, I think, in a hockey room, and when you've been around a bunch of hockey players, partly just because of the way the game has grown up. And I think also the world of hockey is relatively small, particularly professional hockey. Everybody knows somebody who played with somebody, or who was coached by somebody, or who grew up with this guy, or who played against that guy. And I think that level of familiarity also lends itself well to the type of sometimes not so gentle, but more often very gentle kind of verbal bashing that goes on.
Is there any evidence that's been compiled to suggest that chirping might actually give you a competitive advantage on the ice?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because there is. There isn't a ton of evidence. There isn't a ton of research on this stuff. Shockingly, it doesn't appear to be a funding priority for the social sciences. But there is some evidence, and some of the studies are kind of interesting. I think a lot of it has to do with personality types. There is evidence that shows that certain types of hockey players and other athletes tend to rise to the occasion a little more when they're emotionally involved and emotionally engaged, players who burn a little hotter. I think of it in terms of, for example, Max Domi of the Canadiens, who's a player that I spent a lot of time talking to and around. He's a guy who it's obvious when he is battling physically, when he's engaged in the war of words, when he's chirping the other team, when the other team's chirping him, when he's being booed by the fans, opposing fans, presumably not so much the whole one, but this is the sort of stuff that gets him going. And when hockey games are a little more sedate, when it's a little more comfortable, or when people are refusing to engage, often he's not. Not always, it's not universal, but that's an anecdotal case that kind of represents what some of the research has found, in that you are going to perform better depending on your character type if you, for example, provoke the opposition to play better, which means that you're going to rise to the occasion. You're trying to set challenges for yourself in some sense, subliminal or not, by embarking on this kind of stuff. And so that's one piece of it. The other piece of it is, for some players, it actually does distract. And so, again, it has to do with, are you able to concentrate? Has the emotion taken over and impeded your ability to think and execute quickly? And for some players, that happens. And I think, in fact, Elias Pettersson of the Vancouver Canucks alluded to that just this week, talking about how when he was getting rough treatment by the Calgary Flames and being, I mean, I guess it's a slightly different case where it's not so much a physical, or it's not so much a verbal battering that he takes, but more of a physical battering. The point is that he claimed that it was the emotion that kind of took over and it distracted from his game. It got him off his game, which is, of course, precisely what the inveterate chirpers are trying to do. And so, and then the other thing that was interesting, there was a study that was conducted by a fellow who was a graduate student in Florida at the time and is now a professor in the U.S. Midwest. And he actually looked at a trial, or conducted an experiment, I should say, involving online video gamers, some of whom self-declared as trash talkers. And essentially what he did was he forced some of the trash talkers to play without trash talking. And then he took some of the people who are not trash talkers and forced them to gibber and jabber through their games. And then he changed it around such that everybody assumed their more natural role. And in sort of controlling for the abilities of the players who are involved in the study, was able to measure whether they performed better in their traditional kind of more comfortable mode of competition, or whether they were better in the other one, or whether there was any difference at all. And essentially what he was able to establish was that trash talkers, and this is, again, not a huge study, it's not the final word on it, but people who trash talk and who chirp, it actually does generally tend to improve their performance.
You mentioned Max Domi a little while ago. There's a piece in your story about Ty Domi, his father, and Ray Ferraro, and specifically how trash talk nearly backfired in a very dramatic way for Ray during a game. I'm wondering if you can walk us through what happened.
So Ferraro at this point is a member of the Islanders, and they're playing the Rangers in Madison Square Garden, which is there's a little bit of a rivalry between those teams. I think we can frame it that way. And it was right around Halloween. Ray remembers it being the night before Halloween. I have to admit that I didn't actually go and check what the specific date would have been. But he's mixing it up, and Ferraro is one of the guys who has always said that he never really felt engaged in the game if he wasn't really talking. So there's a post-whistle skirmish, as these things used to happen with great regularity in the 80s and 90s. And Domi, who at this point is playing for the Rangers and is, of course, perhaps the most feared guy in the NHL, or certainly one of them, is agitating, and Ferraro essentially goes over and says behind the ref, sort of says, hey, listen, with a head like that, you shouldn't be playing hockey. You should be on somebody's porch. Which is, that is a tremendous chirp. That is an absolutely tremendous chirp. And
it should be pointed out here, for anybody who might not know Ty Domi, that he does
He's got a gigantic melon, yes.
A prodigious cranium, yes.
He is. He could very easily be the human jack-o'-lantern. There's no question about it. And so, surpassingly hard, apparently, his head. So, Yeah, and Domi, of course, did not take this in the spirit it was intended, or maybe he did, and essentially tried to dismember Ferraro, and the linesman had to jump in, and it was, He, in hindsight, was remembering that and chuckling and saying, I'm not entirely sure what I was thinking there. That was just a really bad idea. So, and parenthetically, it's funny because I actually mentioned that in an interview that I did with Max Domi. I told him that story. He thought it was hilarious. Was like, dad, because of course, Max Domi chirps his dad and his dad chirps him because hockey.
You tell a lot of these, or you relay a lot of these chirps. Over the course of your reporting, is there one that stands out that you like as a personal favorite that, I don't know, if you play beer league that you might try to incorporate at some point?
You know what? That's a really good question, Sean. I don't really go in for the ad hominem stuff. I'm trying to think. Some of the classic ones. I mean, there's a Steve Stumpy Thomas one that was very good, where he basically looked at a guy and said, "Geez, you look like you just ran a 100-meter race in a 60-meter gym," which I think is a pretty good chirp. And there's another one associated with that where apparently Stumpy Thomas was quite a wisecracker. And at one point he said to a guy, he's like, "Nice eyebrows. Do you knit them together every night?" That's a good one. My absolute favorite of the ones that I've heard in the making of this story was a Steve Ott, who of course is now the assistant coach of the St. Louis Blues and is an all-time NHL great chirper, probably one of the great chirpers in the history of professional sports. And at one point, he got into it with a player on the team, and as they were being escorted off the ice, because it was toward the end of the period, so they were gonna have to serve their time in the room. And he skates by the other team's bench in earshot of his antagonist and says, "Hey guys, it's okay. I know you hate him. I got him for you," which I think is fantastic. There's a lot going on in that particular trip. I don't know necessarily that I would have the temerity to deploy that sort of stuff in a game. I that's not really how I roll. Although, you know what, it might be more swear words than anything like that. Speaking of which, chirping is at the professional levels tends to be incredibly profane, which also I think makes it a lot funnier and more hilarious, but that's just me.
When we read the story and after you spent the time reporting, have you come away with a deeper understanding of whether chirping is more of an art or more of a science?
It's a good question. There are people who have approached it like a science. I mean, Ott is a guy who is famous for doing background research on all sorts of NHL players. I talked to Nick Cousins from the Canadiens is another talker. And Joe Thornton from the San Jose Sharks, likes to get involved in the cut and thrust of these sorts of things. And they both said that they try to stay plugged into the rumor mill so you can toss out frivolous allegations about people and their behavior on the ice. And so I do think, though, that more generally it is something that you either have or don't, right? And I think that there is an element of art to it and an element of craft to it. Some people work on this craft harder than others. Some are just gifted natural practitioners. What are you going to do? And I do think that it's the sort of thing that you probably can improve on, but don't forget that if you're a bad chirper, you're going to get chirped for being a bad chirper. And so when we did our Canadians team poll for The Athletic, one of the questions on it was, who's the best chirper on the team? And one of the people who responded anonymously, of course, talked about Brendan Gallagher and said, he's not a particularly good chirper, but he cheers hard. So I think I'll vote for him, which of course is a chirp. And so, I do think it is more of an art than it is a science. This being said, the science has stuff to say about what is effective in terms of provocation, what isn't, and it has something to say about personality traits and personality types and how they relate to it. So, maybe there is an element of science to it that could be explored by chirpers yet yet unknown as the game evolves.
Speaking of evolving the game, with the advent of HD television, 4K, everybody can see every bead of sweat on every player on the bench. It's possible that you can see chirps without the benefit of lip readers. Do you think the increasing presence of technology in hockey might change the nature of chirps because everybody at home in their living room is, you know, in so many ways down on the ice with the players?
I think it's. I don't think we can say that it won't. I don't think we can definitively say that it won't. I think there has been substantial evolution in the. I don't know if I want to call it morality. I mean, is there a morality in professional sports? I guess there is, and with sort of in a highbrow sense, but the definition of what is defensible talk. Has changed over time, and I think that's a good thing. I think that there is a potential for chirping to get very dark, and it has at various points, and sometimes it goes off the rails entirely into racist tirades and homophobia and all that stuff. And so I do think there is a broader social evolution that is reflected in the way that players treat each other and talk to each other. And even beyond that, I think probably yes, that if there is essentially zero chance of being able to get away with saying something extremely objectionable / egregious, then I think probably people are going to be mindful of that even in the heat of battle. And there are always going to be occasions where players go too far. One of the unique particularities of hockey, which I think feeds this kind of war of words, is the fact that, as Ferraro mentioned, and I quoted him as saying it in the story, you're in an enclosed environment, which is unlike most other professional sports except possibly boxing, and you are moving around at high speed, and because of the interruptions in the game for various whistles and so forth, the odds are very good that if someone has upset you, you're going to find yourself in front of that person very soon after this has happened. And so it feeds the id, I guess. But this being said, I do think that the fact now that the league is willing to step in and sanction players for crossing the lines and for using language and verbiage that is clearly unacceptable in the broader society. I think that nudges the game in the right direction. And I think the fact that you can rely on having someone make a GIF of whatever it was that you said to player X and it being uploaded to social media within minutes is probably going to keep people honest.
So it seems like chirping might factor into sort of a broader discussion that we're all having about the culture of hockey.
I think so. And I think that, it's not an accident that the story came about as a bit of a lark. I mean, I guess it's the sort of thing that I've been thinking about doing for a while, because you kind of catalog all these chirps as time goes on and you find that there are guys who are very funny in the league. And there's a bunch of stuff, obviously, that I didn't use that I very easily could have and is reflected in the comments to the story. And it came about because we were doing a blitz on the culture of hockey. And I think that it is fundamental to hockey in a lot of ways, partly because of the reasons that we've enumerated in this discussion. But I think also there is a pride in having this kind of badinage, like throwing barbs at each other. It's like, it's essential to how hockey operates and how hockey people are. And it's impossible for me to imagine the game without chirping. And I do think that you can look at the way that chirping has evolved and in the way that it must continue to evolve. And that it is kind of maybe a proxy for the broader discussion, or certainly a part of the broader discussion needs to happen. I mean, hockey, of course, is very hidebound. A lot of that has to do with the people who run the game, who have generally been there for a very long time, who have similar socioeconomic roots, generally speaking, who are generally from the same geographical concentrations. And look, the game is evolving, right? There are people from all over the world who are playing in the NHL now. There are people from all sorts of ethnic origins who are playing in the NHL now, which is not the case as recently as 25 years ago. And so, yeah, I do think that this is part of the broader discussion. And in fact, I think it might be fundamental to the broader discussion in the same way that that it is fundamental to the culture of the team, or culture of the sport, I should say.
Sean, this is the last question I have for you, but a good chirp should A, make somebody laugh, B, get somebody angry, or C, maybe bits of both?
I think the best ones is all of the above, right? I think if you can, if you like, it needs to carry a bit of a sting to be properly effective, I think. And, but it does need to be inventive and original and funny, because otherwise, what's the point? I mean, otherwise it's just a schoolyard insult. It's not a proper chirp. And so, yes, I think there needs to be probably 51% funny, 35% embarrassing, and the rest rage-inducing, I think probably is the proper mix, as I would say.
Sean, thank you very much for taking the time.
Oh, it's my distinct pleasure, Sean. Thanks for having me.